Okay, we're in Psalm 39. Raise your hand if you like pain. I don't see any hands.
Painting?
Pain. No, not painting. Just pain. Raise your hand if you like suffering. You like to suffer? No. I'm not seeing a lot of hands. You know,
I think you just made a point.
Jesus would not have raised his hand either. When he was in the garden and he's getting ready to suffer, Jesus said, "Take this cup from me, Lord. Yet not my will, but yours." He's willing to do it, but it wasn't something he would have raised his hand and said, "I want to do that. I'm in, yeah, count me in for pain." Even Jesus. Now, we've been going through a bunch of the Psalms, and of course, as we've been going through all these Psalms, David, we've been seeing him suffer a lot. He has a lot of pain and distress and trouble and difficulty. And as we've walked through the Psalms, we've been seeing different aspects of that. Not all many of the Psalms deal with some of David's troubles, but there's different slants on them in the different Psalms. And so we've seen David suffer when he's innocent. And we've seen David suffer when he sins, when he's not innocent. And we've seen David suffer at the hands of evil men. And we've seen David suffer at the hands of God. And we've seen David cry out for justice. And we've seen him cry out for relief. We've seen that David finds hope in God and trusts in God when he has no one else to hold on to. And we've seen all of this. And so today we're going to see some more. We're in Psalm 39. We're almost done with this kind of series on the Psalms. We're going to do this and then next week Psalm 40, and then we're going to move into something different out of the Psalms. But if you've got a Bible, Psalm 39, I'm just going to read Psalm 39. It says this, to the choir master, to Jeduthun. Jeduthun in first or second Chronicles, I can't remember, actually was one of the names of David's choir masters. So he's writing this to a particular guy, a real guy, named Jeduthun, a psalm of David. I said, "I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle, so long as the wicked are in my presence." I was mute and silent. I held my peace to no avail, and my distress grew worse. My heart became hot within me. As I mused, the fire burned, and then I spoke with my tongue. O Lord, make me know my end and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. Behold, you have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing before you. Surely, all mankind stands as a mere breath, Selah. Surely, a man goes about as a shadow. Surely, for nothing, they are in turmoil. Man heaps up wealth and does not know who will gather. And now, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of the fool. I am mute. I do not open my mouth, for it is you who have done it. Remove your stroke from me. I am spent by the hostility of your hand. When you discipline a man with rebukes for sin, you consume like a moth what is dear to him. Surely all mankind is a mere breath. Selah. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my cry. Hold not your peace at my tears, for I am a sojourner with you, a guest, like all my fathers. Look away from me, that I may smile again, before I depart and am no more. And so this psalm is more of a downer psalm. There are psalms that kind of are more up psalms and psalms that are down psalms, and this psalm is on the downside of things, and yet it's got up stuff in it. It's not completely down. That's kind of how the psalms are. Got sort of an emotional roller coaster, ups and downs and ups and downs. But it's the psalms are the emotions of believing people going through life, being expressed in paper. That's what the psalms are. So in this psalm, again, David is in trouble. Verse 2, my distress grew worse when he held his peace. Verse 6, surely for nothing, he's talking about people, the human race, they are in turmoil. The human race is in turmoil. Verse 8, deliver me, he says, from my transgressions. Verse 10, remove your stroke from me. I'm spent by the hostility of your hand. Verse 11, when you discipline a man, you consume like a moth what is dear to him. He's being disciplined. Verse 13, look away from me, God, that I may smile again. Again, David believes God has brought the trouble because of his sin. Verse 8, deliver me from what? All my transgressions. Verse 10, remove your stroke from me. Verse 9, I do not open my mouth, for it is you who have done it. Whatever's going on, David believes God's doing this. Verse 11, he's talking to God. He says, when you discipline a man with rebukes for sin. David believes God is disciplining him for his own sin. David's going through some trouble that God is bringing about because of David's sin. Verse 13, look away from me, God, that I may smile again before I depart and am no more. Now, again, just like last week, we don't know the details. We don't know what's going on specifically. David doesn't give us that in the psalm. We don't know exactly what the nature of the suffering is. Is it a sickness? Is it something else? Is it physical, mental, emotional? What? We don't know exactly the specifics of the suffering, nor do we know the specifics of whatever David's sin is. We don't know any of that. But somehow, David seems to be suffering because of his sin, and God is involved in it. So let me ask you this question. How do you feel about God when you suffer? When you're going through suffering, what are you thinking about God? Are you okay with him? Are you saying, oh Lord, I'm all yours? Or are you saying, Lord, what are you doing? Why am I going through this? You can change this if you want, Lord. You ever get angry at God because of whatever's going on in your life, because he's God, you know. If he wanted, he could change everything that's going on in your life if he wanted to. But he doesn't. He lets your life be your life. And whatever is going on, God allows that to happen. I mean, let's be honest. You get angry with God sometimes. And when you're angry with God,
that's natural, like Job.
Yes, Job was a bit upset with God. He trusted God, but he was upset with God at the same time.
I pray more and more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not angry.
Okay. And so, now I have been angry at God. And Job has been angry at God. And it's a real emotion. And it's kind of tricky. Because what do you say to God? When you're angry at him, what do you say? I mean, you know he's in the right. Right? You know that whatever's going on, I can't say, God, you're wrong. That's not going to work. But it kind of feels that way sometimes. It just, you know it's not true, but it's what you feel. You feel like he's wronging you sometimes, even though you know he isn't. That's where David is. See, David's in the middle of that right in this psalm. David's wrestling with God is disciplining him for some sin, whatever the sin is. David's not real happy about it. And so he decides, verse 1, he says, I'm going to guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I'll guard my mouth with a muzzle. So long as the wicked are in my presence, I was mute and silent. That's where David is. I think David wants to say some things to God, but he's in that position where, what do I say? I'm just going to say nothing, because if I speak, I'm going to sin. So I won't say anything. And so that, however, doesn't work real well. So look at verse 3. He says, starting in verse 2, he says, I was mute and silent. I held my peace to no avail. In other words, he couldn't keep his mouth shut, so to speak. He had to speak. Verse 3, he said, my heart became hot within me. As I mused, the fire burned, and then I spoke with my tongue. And so he tried to keep quiet, but it was like a pressure cooker, you know. The heat is on, and the lid is shut, and the pressure builds up inside, and more pressure, and more pressure, and more pressure, and it's going to have to come out at some point. And so he's got to speak. Silence just made him more angry. It didn't help him. He had to talk. He had to verbalize it to God. And so I think we need to understand that whatever you think about God, it's probably good to be honest and open about that. And tell him. Now, tell him respectfully. I mean, he's God. I'm not saying to disrespect God, but I am saying, you know, if you hide your feelings from God, it really doesn't work real well. I mean, think about that for a moment. Is it even possible to hide your feelings from God? If you're angry with God because, you know, maybe you're going through some difficulties that you feel he could correct if he wanted to, then you're angry and you pretend to be all nice to God, but inside you're angry with God as if God was your aunt or something, you know. You're pretending. You put on a nice face on the outside, but on the inside you're something different. We do that with people all the time. I'm afraid you can't do that with God. You can't put the nice face on God. So if you're angry, just tell him, God, I'm angry. And I'm angry with you. And I'm not trying to disrespect. This is just where I am. See, if you put the nice face on, all you're doing is being a hypocrite. And God sees through all of that. Exactly. You're not even getting away with it. Sometimes you can be a hypocrite and get away with it. But with God, when you're a hypocrite, you can't get away with it. And so you might as well just be honest with God. You can't hide anything from him anyway. So why try? And so, verse 3, David speaks. The rest of the psalm is what David speaks. So you kind of get the situation. He's in distress. There's some sin somewhere. God is disciplining David for some sin. There's suffering David's going through. We don't know all the details. David is angry. He won't speak because he's afraid he's going to sin if he speaks. It burns. It builds up. The pressure builds up, and he has to speak. And so here's what he says, starting in verses 4 through 6. Basically, I'm going to summarize that. He says, God, show me my weakness. Let me know my end, the measure of my days, how fleeting I am. You've made my days a few handbreadths. My lifetime is as nothing before you. Mankind stands as a breath. Man goes about as a shadow. He's describing our condition. And he's saying, Lord, just let me see it. He understands that's how it is. It's just sometimes we don't see that. And we don't see it sometimes when we know it's true. We know it's true intellectually, but we sometimes pretend we're bigger than we are. And so, but when we suffer, we need to see that really, we're nothing. And suffering helps us to see this. This is a concept we've talked about before in the Psalms, as we've gone through and seen David deal with his sufferings. Your life is a breath. That's what your life is. Your days are just a few centimeters. Your whole life is just a few centimeters. What to us is a long time, you know, 100 years maybe, to God is nothing. That's just a few minutes. You're a shadow next to God. Verse 6, he talks about, you know, your wealth. Your life, you make all this money for what? What do you make all this money for? In the end, for nothing. David says in verse 12, if you skip down there, he says, I am a sojourner with you. The word English word sojourner means like someone who stays temporarily.
A traveler.
He's passing through. You're not there permanently. A guest, he says, like all my fathers. All the fathers of Israel. They're just guests. That's all. We're temporary here. You know, you've heard the saying, this world is not my home. I'm just passing through. That's true. A couple years ago, Leanne and I went for our 25th anniversary to Colorado, and we stayed for a week in the house of this family that they allow ministry people to stay in their home as a kind of like a ministry of that they have. And beautiful home, kind of in the mountains, really pretty place. We loved it. And they were gone. They were out of town for the week we were in. So in a sense, it was, we were kind of watching their house for them while they were away. And so they, at the end of the week, they came back and we had to leave because it's their house. We're just guests. But what if we decided, I like it here. We're staying. We're moving in. We're going to stay in this home. I'm sorry, but I've got the upstairs bedroom. Now, you'd probably think we were a bit crazy if we did something like that, because we're just guests, guys. Not our home. Guests don't own the home they stay in. It's just temporary. Oh, that's what Earth is. Earth is a hotel. And you and I, we're here for a few nights. And that's it. And we don't own any of it. We don't get to go to the owner of the hotel and say, hey, yeah, this room, this is mine. I got this. No, when our time is up, we have to leave. That's how the human race is with Earth. Generations come and they stay and they leave. And new generations take their place and they come and they stay and they leave. And new generations come and they stay and they leave. And new generations come, stay, leave. Come, stay, leave. And it keeps repeating itself over and over and over and over. And you and I, we're just here for a few nights. And here's the thing of it. Every generation somehow wants to claim ownership. We want to say, I'm investing in this. This is mine. And then they die and go on and a new generation comes. And we find out it really wasn't theirs. You and I are guests on Earth. Your money is temporary. Your home is temporary. Your family is temporary. Your degree, your job, your car, it's all temporary. So why do we live as if those things are what last? We live our lives for money, job, home, family, degree, car, as if those are the things that last, when in reality, every one of those things is temporary and it's going to be gone tomorrow. Now, suffering helps us see the reality that Earth is temporary. See, when you're sick, you may complain because it hurts. That's natural. That's, you know, I don't begrudge anybody for that. But also, let the suffering open your eyes to the reality that this earth will pass away. And so will you. Pray for God to show you how weak you are. But when you do this, when you start to see how weak you are, don't stay there. David doesn't stay in his weakness. Look at verse 7. And now, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. So you see what he's doing. Show me how fleeting I am. Let me see that I'm just a handbreadth, that my life is a breath, nothing more. Let me see my weakness. And in doing so, let me not hold on to that stuff or to my strength. Lord, where is my strength? My hope is in you, O Lord. See, we're not supposed to see how weak we are just so that we can see how weak we are. That isn't the point. We're to see our weakness so that we can then see how much we need God. That's what verse 7 is getting at. He describes his weakness in 4 through 6 and then says, God, you are my hope. It's not this stuff. You are my hope. See, when you hurt, that's when you often see that your hope is not in your husband who can't help you. And that your hope is not in your home that can't heal you. Because it doesn't have that power. And that's when you see that your bank account cannot buy you forgiveness. It just can't. That's when you see that whatever it is here on earth just can't do what you think it can do. That's when you're weak and you're sick. See, sickness and pain and suffering, it kind of makes us weak. It opens our eyes to, hey, you're weak. And you start seeing I'm weak. It's what David's praying for. But he's praying for it so that he can see God. Because that other stuff gets in the way of seeing God. When you're weak is when you start seeing that all that other stuff is not where your hope is supposed to be. Then you can put your hope in God. That's the point. Is to not stay in just thinking how weak you are, but to take that to God. Sometimes suffering is nothing more than a big slap in the face to wake us up to our need for God, because we just don't think we need God. But you know what? You do. You need God. Not earth. You need God. Go to Him. Hold on to Him. See, I believe God has brought David suffering for his sin so that David would see his weakness, verses 4, 5, and 6, and that David would then put his hope back in God, verse 7. The discipline is to correct David and to take him back to God. Now, one of the things I want you to think about is, remember who we're talking about. This is David. David is like, we think of David as one of the giants of the faith. We start talking about, you know, godly men in the Bible, and, you know, you start naming them. And David is usually on that list. But David here needs to get slapped around a bit to get his soul back on the right track. Now, if God will do that for David, will He do it for you? See, God will bring you distress if that distress will force you to come back to Him and hope in Him. And God will do that any day of the week. He will always make that choice, because you're better off having God with suffering than having no God and a perfectly comfortable life. Because you weren't made to have a comfortable life. You were made for God. That's why you exist. And so God will do what he does in verse 11. You see verse 11? When you discipline a man with rebukes for sin, God will do that. And he says, when he does that, God will consume like a moth what is dear to that man. Just think of a moth. Like moths eat fabric. They eat clothing and things like that. That's the picture David's giving you. God is consuming like a moth eating away all of your clothes. God will take away what's dear to you to rebuke you for sin, if that will turn you around. Because when you live for earth, you're in big trouble. Even if you don't know it. Even if you're perfectly comfortable in earth, you're in big trouble if that's what you're living for. And so God offers you a trade. He'll give you a trade. He'll take away the comfort and offer you himself instead. And what would you rather have? Earthly comfort or God? Sometimes that's, I'm not saying that's always the choice. Sometimes God grants earthly comfort to his people who are following him. But sometimes that is the trade that God is doing. He's willing to bring pain in order to turn people around. And so God takes away comfort to give us himself. And when we go back and we make Jesus our hope, we then can ask God to remove the pain. And that's what David does. Look at verse 7. He says, for what do I wait? My hope is in you, Lord. Verse 8, deliver me from my transgressions. Verse 10, remove your stroke from me. He's praying for God to stop. God, whatever the specifics are that we don't know that what they are, David's saying, Lord, stop. Please stop. Verse 12, he says, hear me. Hear my prayer. Give ear to my cry. Don't hold your peace at my tears, God. Consider my tears. Verse 13, look away from me, God, that I may smile again. This look away from me means the same thing as verse 10. Remove your stroke from me. That's what look away from me means here. This isn't look away from me in a good sense, where God is, he's not wanting God to look at him in a good sense. You know, sometimes they say, look at me, God. But you got the context tells you what it means. This is a look away from me that I may smile again. Yeah, don't be picking on me. That's the idea. And he's asking God for this. He's saying, God, turn away your discipline from me. So here's the deal. If you and I, if we just go to God and we just start asking God for stuff for our own comfort, but your hope is not in God, why should he hear you? You don't hope in God. All you want is to be comfortable. I mean, what's the priority here? Is it God? I'm going to hope in God. And once I have hope in God, I can go to God with my requests. Is God first, and I'm going to put my hope in him? Or is really the issue for me just, God, it hurts. I just don't want to be in pain. See, that's why verse 7 is so important to the rest of what follows, verses 8 through 13. Verse 7 is the key to his requests. This isn't a man who just wants to be free from pain. He does want to be free from pain. I'm not saying that. But there's something else here first. He's decided, I'm nothing. God, let me see that I'm nothing. I'm putting my hope in you. Now, please remove it. And he's just being real. He's going to God, who is his hope, and being real. That's what's going on. See, if we first, when there's sin involved, when we hurt, it's not always because of sin, by the way. We've gone over that before, too. That's part of David's varied experience with trouble and distress. He doesn't always suffer because of sin. But if there's sin, if you first repent and acknowledge your sin and acknowledge your need for God, God really likes that. He likes that kind of heart. See, the point of the discipline is to change our hearts. But once we change our hearts, the discipline has achieved its goal. You can go to God for relief. Ask Him. It's okay. But do it with a right heart. I think it's important for us to understand the purpose of sickness and suffering and pain and death. The purpose of all of those things is to remind us of our sin. I don't mean, again, like I've already said, I don't mean every instance of pain is a directly flows from a specific instance of sin. That's not what the Bible teaches. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But this is what I'm saying. Suffering, sickness, pain, death are all a normal part of this world. They're here whether you like it or not, and there's nothing you can do about that. They're here. This world is broken. This world has nothing to offer you long term. It's a nice bed for a night. That's it. But it's not where you want to live. This world is broken and has nothing to offer you because of sin. Suffering helps us see this. See, if we never suffered, if nobody ever suffered, then what would happen is that we would never take our eyes off this world. Suffering opens our eyes to this world isn't all that we think it is. It's not the paradise that you dream of. And God insists that a world chock full of sin will never be a paradise. How can you have a paradise where there's sin? And so suffering and pain and death and all of that are here as reminders that you want to put your hope in this world? Okay, well here, you got COVID now. You want to put your hope in this world? Well, that's fine. Here, your marriage is falling apart. You want to put your hope in this world? Well, that's fine. You put your hope in this world if that's what you want to put your hope in. But the stock market the economy just went down and you just lost your job. You still want to put your hope in this world? Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Well, this is the way the world is. It's All of this is just a reminder for us of the brokenness of earth. We suffer and we die because of sin in the end. In this psalm, that's why David is suffering, because of some sin. So here's the deal. We're Christians. As Christians, we believe in the gospel of Jesus. You see, ultimately, sin is why Jesus suffered. You see, sin and suffering go together. They went together in the garden when Adam and Eve fell and they ate the fruit and God brought the curse and he brought suffering. Why? Because of sin. That's why he brought suffering. God actually promised them, the day you eat of that fruit, you will surely die. Death, sin. God tied them together before they ate the fruit. Paul ties it together. He says the wages of sin is death. They go together. And on the cross, they're going together, sin and suffering. That's why Jesus suffered, you know. He's taking on sin. If Jesus is going to take on sin, he has to suffer. He has to. Suffering is the natural consequence of sin. So then we have a Savior who has suffered with us. And his suffering shows us how severe sin is. It's not a light thing. But his suffering also shows us how much God loves us. Because God was willing to go through that and take on your sin and mine. Because he loves us. So when you sin and it hurts, and it does, remember you're weak. You need Christ. Put your hope in him. He understands. He understands the pain. And he understands it a whole lot better than you do, in fact. We're going to close with a song. And it's a song about the sufferings of Jesus. It's an old song. It's got probably has some old words in it. So for those of you who English is not your first language, it might be, some of the words may be hard. But it's a really good song about the sufferings of Jesus. And so I'm going to turn it over to my wife, who's going to play this song. Just stand and sing with us. This is called O Sacred Head Now Wounded. And then we'll close afterwards.